you trying to keep a real smiley face on a very difficult day here in Tucson, Arizona. On the other side of the glass, my buddy John Couch, engineering and producing the show for this Thursday, June 11th, 2020. You know, 2020 is the year that just keeps giving us really bad stuff, like this ferocious fire that is now burning out of control above Tucson's Pima Canyon in the foothills of the Catalinas, where the smoke was so heavy this morning, it actually hurt my lungs to breathe. My hat is off, and John's as well, to the brave men and women at this hour who are literally putting their lives on the line to build a fire break that will hopefully prevent a disaster in the residential areas of the far northern foothills. Residents of the Pima Canyon Luxury Home Subdivision are now under a mandatory evacuation order. Other areas north of Ina, between Alvernon and First, are on standby. CDO High School is now being used as a shelter. Our prayers going out to everybody involved in this. By the way, if you have any kind of animal issues with livestock or pets, Pima Animal Control is very much the Pima Animal Care Center reaching out. You can call them. They are there to help you in this emergency. Here we are in the 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, trying to bring people together right here on the radio. We'll try to keep you posted if we have any late breaking news on the fire. But right now, very important story is about school reopening in Pima County. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is superintendent of the largest school district in Tucson, the Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo joins us on the live line. Dr. Trujillo, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very, very well, Bill. And before we talk about school, our hearts, our wishes, and our prayers are with all of those that are affected by the Bighorn Fire. We are, of course, concerned about all of the residents that will be evacuating their homes. Tucson Unified, we have an emergency agreement with Pima County where the shelter of our gymnasiums and spaces in our high schools can be used to shelter the community if need be. So we certainly join you in wishing all those folks the best and keeping them in our thoughts.
Boy, this is all hands on deck. The firefighters, this has now become, I believe, one or two as far as the top priorities in the nation. This fire, which started by lightning on June, maybe actually less than a week ago when all of this began. It started as a very small fire, and just really the winds didn't help through the days. But I'll tell you, it's all hands on deck. Just about every firefighting equipment with aerial drops and everything is being thrown into this because hopefully the fire break will hold and the residents of Pima Canyon will be able to come back to their homes. But it was just too dangerous a situation, according to Sheriff Napier and the Pima and the Sheriff's Department. They felt they had to go door to door and let people know, look, we need you out now, because even if they were to stay, that smoke is just, it is crippling. It is so heavy. I went out this morning, could barely make it down the driveway to get the paper, and we live in the central foothills near Swan and River, and it was that thick, that blanket of smoke. This is a really bad day. No beating around the bush, Dr. Trujillo, for Tucson, Arizona.
It is. It is. With the COVID-19 virus rampaging across our county and this tragic fire, it is a challenging day, Bill. It is a challenging day. I think today also was another single day record for positive cases for COVID-19 in both Arizona and Pima County. So certainly hoping that tomorrow brings better news.
All right. On Tuesday, we had for about 10 minutes a segment with the state superintendent of schools, a woman you know very well, Dr. Trujillo, Kathy Hoffman, tried to give us a general feeling about the state plan to reopen the schools. Bottom line, what I got out of it was that it's pretty much up to each of the state in the school districts throughout the state to determine how they want to proceed with this. And another important thing that jumped out during the interview, I did not realize that 20% or one in five students in the state of Arizona does not have access, Dr. Trujillo, to a computer.
Yeah, that's that's correct, Bill. And Superintendent Hoffman is great. She's a great supporter of public education around the state, but has actually been very active in the first few years of her term in making an effort to visit Southern Arizona schools. She's in and out of TUSD schools. She visits AMPI, Sunnyside, Cat Foothills, very active in paying attention to the needs of Southern Arizona school districts. The roadmap to reopening has a lot of options. I think it's a great, great framework that school districts can use to sort of map out how they are going to reopen school. And you mentioned the challenge of 20%. Yes, it is a significant portion of the student body that, at least in Tucson Unified, that struggles with internet access and struggles with access to a device. That's the reason that we rushed almost $4 million forward to purchase 15,000 devices to take care of those students. So thankfully, our district, we've essentially become a one-to-one in terms of every student now having access to a district-issued machine. But we still have a lot of work to do with internet speed and internet service in the homes, which is the other part of the problem.
So when does school begin?
Well, our classes, school begins, and when I say begin, it doesn't necessarily mean physical, or it doesn't necessarily mean we're still working all that out. But the school year begins August 6th, and we have heard very loudly from our parents that right now in the survey data that we have distributed and that's been returned to us, and through a lot of the focus groups, I've been able to meet personally with parents. I've got another round of focus groups, virtual focus groups with district parents coming up next week. It's looking like between 17 to 20% of our parents just simply do not feel safe or comfortable returning their kids to a traditional classroom, a brick and mortar school, until this virus is under control, or at least until there's a downward trend. So we are working very hard to develop a dual system where there will be full-on remote learning options from home available for any family at any school they attend to continue on with their child's education, as well as in-person instruction with all of the CDC-compliant precautions required, from PPE to masks to hand sanitizer. So we're trying to create both systems so that our parents have choice.
Will the systems be working to get kind of in tandem? How I'm trying to visualize how this would work. You have students that would want the face-to-face teaching, and then there are others that want remote. Do we have enough teachers to supply both needs?
That's interesting. So we are working very closely with our teachers, our employee associations. I know the Teachers Association has partnered with us, and we have several meetings with them as well to get their feedback. Also, I've been doing some focus groups with our teachers and our employees. And really what's come to the forefront is the concept of maybe live streaming. So we're not necessarily duplicating efforts.
Okay.
So the way that it would work is if I'm an algebra teacher and I've got 30 students in my class assigned to me for first period, let's say, well, there might be 15 students that have shown up physically, and I'm socially distancing those 15 kids throughout my classroom, and I'm teaching them live, but at the same time, there's another 15 students that are watching me from home. So everybody gets the same experience, everybody gets the same access, It's just in a different environment. We're also very cognizant about teacher workload. So we're also really trying to take into consideration that our teachers are some of the hardest working in Arizona. There's a lot of demands on them. When we're thinking about what this dual structure looks like, one of our guiding principles is taking a look at the demands on our teachers, teacher workload, and not adding to it. We certainly don't want to contribute to stress and burnout and throw more on the teacher's plate, because this is intimidating enough for our teachers to have to shift into this whole different environment. You have a difficulty of navigating COVID-19 in our employees' personal lives as well, not just in the professional life, but in the personal. So our reentry plan is really built off of one of the guiding principles is do no harm, and try not to add more demands or additional responsibilities on our staff to the extent possible.
All right. I have so many more questions, obviously, for Dr. Trujillo, but we are going to take a break right here. He will be kind enough to stick around on the live line in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. It's 12:15. We'll be back with Dr. Trujillo talking about this reentry plan for school to begin August 6th at TUSD. Right. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. There is so much information. We're trying to get into a one-hour program today. We've got the fire out of control. We're hoping the back burn is successful to save the residential development of Pima Canyon. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent of TUSD, with us on the live line in the first segment, saying school begins August 6th. 17% to 20% of the parents that Dr. Trujillo has talked to are not in favor of the traditional going back to school in a traditional setting because of COVID-19 at this point. And Dr. Trujillo was outlining perhaps a dual structure where there would be a live stream for the kids that didn't want to come in. They could watch the classroom instruction. Dr. Trujillo, would that technically be possible? Do you have the equipment to do this?
And we do, because we did rush forward so many millions of dollars to outfit the district with deployable laptops and deployable tablets. What's going to cost us money is live streaming equipment, cameras. Those are the types of details that we're going to be seeing to. And this is where the CARES Act money that was distributed to the district is really going to be beneficial. Through the CARES Act passed by the Congress, Tucson Unified's cut is going to end up being just shy of about $17 million. And these dollars are meant to handle the cost of COVID-19-related expenditures, whether it's implementing safety protocols, purchasing PPE, or outfitting our instructional model to make sure that it's accessible to all of the students. So, thankfully, we've got this grant that should be able to help us absorb some of the cost here.
Some of the Phoenix school districts are talking about a Monday through Thursday week. Are you still looking at the 5-day a week school?
We've got a couple of different models right now, but right now the predominant model is still a 5-day. We've got 45,000 parents to think about. We've got 64 elementary schools with thousands and thousands of children under the age of 10. So we also have to think about the city's workforce in terms of TUSD being in a unique position that some of the other Phoenix districts aren't. As TUSD goes, so does the city. So if we are looking at a 3 or 4 day calendar, we also have to think of the burden of childcare costs that we're pushing on the families. What's that going to do for work schedules across the city? What's that going to do to our local economy as parents have to take time off? So these aren't easy decisions. And we're also trying to make decisions and create alternative systems that also inconvenience parents in the least. That's also one of our guiding principles, is not to be too disruptive with the parents that we serve. So, but there are, as you said, Bill, there's numerous districts, mostly in Maricopa County, that are taking a look at the four-day-a-week schedule.
And that would be, I guess, Friday would be a cleaning day, from what I understand. That's what they would use that for.
Yeah, the idea is, and the idea is very logical. It makes sense. The idea is, hey, listen, we limit exposure by just doing 4 days a week versus five. They're already here. We can probably eliminate risk by eliminating one out of the 5 days of the week, limit it to four, take Friday to do some really, really deep cleaning. The challenge with that then just becomes childcare. You've got to think about that and what that does to your parents. And then I, as well as many, many educators and many of my colleagues, we have extreme concerns, particularly with middle school and high school age children being free to roam around on a Friday and with no structure. So we also have to think about that as well. As their parents are working, what kind of issues does that create in the city? What kind of challenges does that present to parents? I always believe that kids need to be in school 5 days a week, ideally, but sometimes that may not be possible. But we should have some activities and some alternatives for them if it's not going to be the classroom. So that's kind of my take on 4-day versus 5-day, but I do understand the logic behind a 4-day week.
So the clock is running here, Dr. Trujillo. What's your timetable look like? Do you have as your chronology?
So June 16th, I'd like to invite everybody listening to tune into our governing board meeting. That'll be the first in a series of two presentations that will present publicly our plans for reentry. On the 16th, the public and the board will get a view of what our proposal is for the protection of our employees with personal protective equipment, how we're going to implement social distancing, what our procedures and recommendations are going to be for cafeterias, for transportation routes, for sanitation protocols inside the schools. We will also be talking about schedules and potential schedules that we'll be recommending. Then on the 23rd will be part two, and we're going to invite everybody to tune in on the 23rd, where we'll be presenting our instructional model. More details about a hybrid live stream versus live traditional instruction, how that would look, what expectations would be for students, what expectations would be for teachers. We'd have a finalized model ready to discuss. And then we, at the end of the month, want to have a finalized reentry plan document similar to what we saw coming from Arizona Department of Education that would be fully available digitally via PDF format on all of our social media platforms and on all of our school websites. So that's a little bit of our timeline. Right now, we are still heavy communicating, collaborating, getting feedback. As I mentioned, I've got several forums set up for next week. Our Teachers Association, they're doing some forums with their members. So really, the month of June is really dedicated to listening to as many employees, to as many parents, and to as many students. I've also had some very enlightening student forums with largely high school kids expressing some of the concerns that they have about distance learning and about the virus. So I think that we're going to be in a much better spot at the end of the month with a finalized plan.
Do you want to talk briefly about the meeting, about the, for want of a better term, sex education update that came out of the meeting? Could you give us a real brief update on that?
Absolutely, Bill. We made a commitment in September that we recognize that part of the difficulty with family life curriculum up until September 2019 was that we brought forward a proposed curriculum, but we never developed or presented alongside of it an alternative curriculum. So a lot of the feedback that we heard from parents was, hey, listen, I would exercise my right to not have my child participate in family life curriculum lessons, but the bigger problem I have is you're not showing me what my child is going to get. And that feedback was right on. And we wanted to make sure that for any of our parents who are not going to be authorizing their children's participation in our family life curriculum, because the parents have to actually opt into it. They have to give permission for their children to participate, that we wanted to show them exactly what learning activities, what lessons, what alternative curriculum would be given to their children. And we were able to present that on Tuesday night. Heavy focus on personal safety, on cyberbullying, drug and alcohol resistance. So gone were any topics relating to sex education, any topics relating to sexual orientation or gender. So it's a very watered down. I don't want to say watered down, but it's a curriculum that is exclusive of the very topics that our parents have felt uncomfortable subjecting their kids to. So it is posted on our district website. We have webinars that will walk any parent through and present the actual components of the alternative curriculum so parents are fully informed.
All right. In the final minute or so, please recap now the plan as it is right now, Dr. Trujillo, for reopening school on August 6th, if you would, please.
So right now, tentatively, we are looking at a hybrid system where parents get choice Parents would have a choice between virtual instruction from their homes or having live traditional instruction. We're looking at a live stream model. Students would not have to withdraw from their schools. This virtual instruction would be available through every school in our district. Live instruction, students showing up, expect CDC protocols and recommendations to be fully implemented. Expect social distancing. Expect the usage of masks. Expect some alternative schedules to try to keep our class sizes a little smaller. And expect also drastic changes to how we do food service, and that most likely we will be minimizing the use of our cafeterias and probably shifting more, especially with elementary, probably shifting more to meals being served inside of classrooms. So that's a sort of a quick hit. Also,
thank
for
you.
Members of the public, you can expect that there will probably be some active barriers, much like we see in banks, of plexiglass at our front offices, our registration offices, and our reception areas across the district.
Thank you very much, Dr. Trujillo, and we'll get an update from you very soon. Stay safe. Thank you.
Always great to be back, Bill. Stay safe, stay healthy.
All right. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo with us. CBS Network News coming up right after the break. Be right back.
CBS News Special Report. With 30 minutes left of trading, stocks are still falling sharply on Wall Street, with the Dow down more than 1,800 points right now. Market analyst Quincy Crosby says it's a retreat from recent optimism that the economy could recover quickly as coronavirus lockdowns ease.
There are concerns about perhaps, and I stress perhaps, a resurgence of cases of the coronavirus.
CBS's Diane King Hall.
One veteran Wall Street trader said in his morning note that the scope and volume of the previous market gains had started to show some weakness this week, and that the caution flag may be seen again over the next few weeks.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger on the latest jobless numbers.
We had another 1.5 million Americans file for unemployment benefits last week. That means that we've now seen 44 million Americans file.
Taking a look right now, the NASDAQ is down 513, S&P down 186. CBS News Special Report, I'm Matt Piper.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Man, what a busy day we have going here in old Tucson, Arizona. This portion presented by Green Things and Zocalo Village. Extraordinary collection of beautiful furniture, handmade, most of it over at Zocalo Village. Then, of course, Green Things, 50 years and still growing at 3384 East River Road. Your go-to place for all of your green things. My wonderful engineer producer, John, was telling me that he's been checking out Green Things, right, John? Pretty good stuff over there at Green Things. What a great inventory of amazing plants, trees, and annuals. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Before we go to Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, that situation with the fire break being built, hopefully to prevent the disaster of the residential areas in the far northern foothills. Pima Canyon residents were evacuated at about 9:15. Other areas north of Ina between Alvernon and First, certainly on a standby, be on the alert. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's the former superintendent of Flowing Wells School District, one-time Arizona Top School Superintendent of the Year. Dr. Hendricks, with us calling in from San Diego. That's a place I think a lot of us wish we were right now. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing okay, Bill. Listen to Dr. Trujillo's woes. I mean, I find him in probably the most least enviable position. You know, he and his colleagues across the state, they've got to deal with a lot of moving parts here.
Yeah, his survey showing 15% to 20% of parents just are not going to, they're not going to send the kids back to school. And there are some surveys out showing that 1 in 5 teachers are unlikely to come back to school in the fall.
I think everybody, no matter what their part is in this whole enterprise, is overwhelmed. And there are no easy solutions. I think teachers, you know, they were thrown a curveball, you know, in the spring with having to completely revise their curriculum delivery system with online instruction. Many were not prepared to do that. And they really, I think a lot of districts did not have the sophistication and infrastructure to do that kind of thing. But now we've got, we've had a couple months with school closed. We're looking at opening again in August. And I got to tell you, the things that I'm reading and hearing is that parents are very concerned. In fact, there's a USA Today poll that says that, you know, 2/3 of the parents find it hard to believe that their children would comply with the 6-foot rule. Now, that's, you know, social distancing is, you know, a major component to the CDC guidelines. And I think it's a problem. I think listening to Dr. Trujillo, I applaud his efforts to do live streaming and come up with a hybrid model. But, you know, something that I don't hear a lot of talk about is this very unique portion of our student population, and that's the elementary school students. Because let's face it, a typical classroom is about 30 feet by 30 feet. That's not a lot of elbow room, excuse the pun, but not
that's
a lot
right.
of elbow room for, for physical distancing. You know, and we know about young children, they're in a constant state of motion. And to expect them to sit at their desks and stay away from other students and to stay in a designated space, you know, whether those seats and chairs and desks are arranged properly, it's going to be really hard to glue those students down to those seats for an entire day. That's not the social makeup of young children. And so, you know, I'm really concerned about that. I'm also concerned about students who are perpetually touching physical items. They touch each other.
Yeah.
It's the nature of classroom socialization, and it's going to be hard to continually monitor. And so, you know, the only solution I see is, you know, let's reduce the number of students in the classroom, which means you're going to have some kind of rotating schedule. Because if you have a typical classroom of 25 to 30 elementary students in this small space, it's going to be virtually impossible for a teacher to keep those students in their seats. I think it can work at the secondary level. I think students can stay in their seats, but at the elementary level, that's not the culture in the classroom. That's not how students are socialized, and it's going to be very, very difficult. It's also going to be difficult for young students to keep their face masks on. I can see what that's going to look like too. And how are you going to monitor the restrooms? Because they're, you know, that's a petri dish of germs. How are you going to have somebody in there monitoring every time a child goes into that restroom? And then there's a lunchtime monitoring. I don't know what we do about space on buses, but it's really complex. It's really complicated. And I don't know what the solution is to that, but I do know that, you know, when Dr. Trio says that 17 to 20% of parents would be uncomfortable when sending their children to school, I would think at the elementary level, I'd be particularly at that level, I'd be one of the people in that percentage, because I'd be very concerned about, you know, trusting my child in that environment to follow all of the safety and health conditions. It's going to be really complicated.
And with COVID seemingly, you know, spiking right about now, you could see that 1 in 5 parents saying no right now. You could see that going all the way up to 50%. So there may be a point where it's a de facto reduction in class right off the bat.
Well, yes. And I think, yeah, attendance management is an issue, because we don't really know how many students and their parents will be comfortable with sending their children to school. We don't know how comfortable they are on a day-to-day basis. We don't know how distance learning is really going to work this fall. I know there's more equipment. The infrastructure is better. But there's still a lot of students that are not complying with what's expected, you know, to work at home. And I think teachers are overwhelmed with that. Even those teachers that have a lot of technological experience and expertise, they're going to be concerned about how this is all going to come together. And if it is a hybrid model, as students stay home some days, do they go to class another day? Again, that's that whole idea of attendance enrollment monitoring to keep the numbers down, because if you've got 25, 30 students in an elementary classroom, to me, that's not a safe environment.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up and leave it there. We'll be checking in with you, Dr. Hendricks, and I know you're very concerned about this fire in the foothills as well.
I am. We're all concerned.
It's a really tough day here in Tucson. Thank you, Bob Hendricks. Stay safe, okay?
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bob Hendricks with us on the live line. The 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series will turn to the race for Pima County Recorder. That's next.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'll tell you, a road trip outside getting out of Tucson right now really seems very, very appealing. Green Things, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, but I'm thinking about, what about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? 3 hours east of Tucson to a beautiful area of the Southwest, and that elevation is very, very tempting. 88 degrees right now over in Silver City, and that's going to be considerably cooler than our high today of around 105, 106. So that's very appealing. And the elevation, of course, keeps things cooler over there. SouthwestNewMexico.org to find out what to do, all sorts of suggestions and ideas about places to stay. It's time for our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice series, where we interview all the candidates. We have a clearinghouse of all of our candidate interviews from all of our local shows, and that's at kvoi.com. We turn now to the Pima County Recorder's race and candidate Gabriella Casares Kelly. Gabriella is a Democrat, and she's with us on the live line. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing really well today. Thank you.
I'm afraid I might have mispronounced your name, so go ahead.
My name is Gabriela Cáceres Kelly.
Cáceres. So
it's pronounced Casa, like a house on the res where I grew up. Cáceres Kelly. So skuktash. Anyanyaptugik Gabriela Cáceres Kelly. Bismolchkuk Anjit. Good morning. My name is Gabriela Cáceres Kelly, and I am from the communities of Bismol and Kuk, which are located on the Thomasson Nation right here in Pima County.
Tell me about why you are running. A little bit about yourself, please.
Sure. I jumped into this race because I have been doing voter registration and early voting in the Thonopsin community and throughout southern Arizona. And I have come to realize that simply registering voters and informing people about early voting is really difficult. And there are whole populations of people that are not getting that information right here in our county. I am a lifelong Pima County resident and member of the Thonopsin Nation. And so I have been working on the Thonopsin Nation, although I live here in Tucson. And so I would register voters on my lunch break or after work. And we would just talk about the different questions that they had. And because I was dealing with people who often didn't have physical addresses, they don't have house numbers or street number or street names, or I was dealing with maybe students who maybe they were not tribal members but lived from out of state, they were having confusion. And then if anybody has ever registered a voter before, you'll know that if you've ever volunteered, you've run into people who automatically say, I can't vote because I have a felony. And so that isn't always true. And what we were recognizing was that people really were not connected to the information that they needed to know. So I have been community organizing for a number of years. I am the co-founder of Indivisible Thono. It's a grassroots community organization that focuses on education and civic engagement for members of the Thonopsin Nation. And because of that work there, it has led me to being politically active throughout all of southern Arizona and a little bit in nationally even. And so I've been working on developing these relationships and bridging communities that aren't normally contacted and aren't normally engaged.
Gabriela, let me ask you, FN Rodriguez, of course, is retiring after 28 years, nearly three decades FN has been there.
Very long time.
Do you know her or what kind of do you think you could fill in for her and do a great job?
So I know of her because of my work doing direct voter outreach, I have built a relationship up with the office.
Uh-huh.
And at one time, I actually even applied for a job in their office. And I think that's actually a really important story. So I'll go ahead and share that. I applied for a position that was specific to Thonopsin outreach, voter outreach. And I went through two interviews, one of which included a Thonopsin language test. It's important to know that I've worked in tribal institutions for 14 years, and I have never once had to take a language test as a prerequisite to a job, but I wanted the job. So we had a one-on-one, and during the one-on-one, I was told that they would not take I was offered the job on the spot, and then I was told that it was only for the lowest pay that it had been advertised. So it had been advertised from $14 an hour to $33, and I was only qualified for the $14. What that meant is they weren't going to take my bachelor's degree, which I have from the University of Arizona, or my master's degree in educational leadership from Northern Arizona University, or at the time, the 12 years that I had worked in tribal communities. They weren't going to take any of that into consideration, saying that it was on the wrong classification, and if they changed it, no one would be able to meet the minimum qualifications. So what that really shows me is that this office has not been very open or flexible or welcoming to Indigenous populations. That position remained open for about 4 years. And what that means is that 4 years of relationship building gone, 4 years of potential voters registered, early voting sites promoted, and that has devastating impact on the community. And so I have spoken with FN. She's very willing to help me with the transition. You know, Mike Boyd was the recorder right before her, and he took all the furniture when he left office. And that was something that FN was very concerned about. So it's a testament to her dedication to the voters of Pima County. But she is willing to work with me on that. And okay. She does know that I'm very, very knowledgeable and that I do have a lot to bring to that office.
I want to give you a minute or two to kind of summarize your campaign. Gabriela Casa Rez Kelly, go ahead.
I am interested in automatic voter registration, a legislative move, same-day voter registration, rights restoration for people with felonies. I want to provide practical solutions for Pima County, increase voter confidence with ballot text message receipts, voter drop boxes, early voting centers, increased marketing and visibility for the office. I am an innovative thinker. I'm very creative, and I'm heavily skilled at community organizing and bringing communities together. I think nationally we're talking about this issue of who doesn't vote and why, and we need to really prioritize and spend time investing in the communities that we haven't been reaching. And I think that my campaign has a lot of energy behind it. It's been very exciting. We have been endorsed by so many organizations, including I was recently endorsed by House Minority Leader Charlene Fernandez. I've been endorsed by Senator Victoria Steele, the CWA of Arizona, the Pima Area Labor Federation, Mickey Lee, Councilwoman, Crystal Ann Foster, and Adelisa Grijalva from the Tucson Unified School District, and three members from the Babakivir Unified School District, as well as local businesses. I'm starting to get some endorsements through that. And so the energy behind this campaign has just been really wonderful, and we're reaching people that aren't normally reached in a regular campaign.
All right.
And so we want to try to stress the imagination of what people can expect from this office.
And your website is?
My website is gabriela4recorder.org. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we even have a Vine that is highly visited at the moment. And we try to put up highly relevant, fun, informative information, and we're just trying to make sure that we're reaching people where they're at.
Thank you very much, Gabriela. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
All right. Quickly, I'm just getting news here that we now have three DC-10s. Boy, that is that are doing airdrops now on the fire above Pima Canyon. That is so hazardous. Boy, our prayers to that team that is now working on the ground and in the air in very, very treacherous conditions. I am Bill Buckmaster, The Buckmaster Show, and on behalf of my engineer-producer, John Couch, please stay safe out there. Have a great afternoon.